Morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you're watching this, either live or later when you come to our Facebook page. My name is Glenn Mulcahy. I'm the host of For Love of the Game Summits, a podcast, and now our live streams. And joining me today are two guests. Beside me is Rob Pallante, is the founder of Mindset Body Bank, played to a really high level of hockey, some professional. And beside him is Jason Podolin, who is the founder of Up My Hockey, also played as an NHL alumni, played for the Canadian World Juniors team, and had a pretty amazing minor hockey career up to that. Our chat today will focus on things hockey as well as mindset, which is the area that both of them are now in. And not to take away from either of their thunder, thought I would just give them an opportunity to kind of expand on their background a little more. So, Mr. Pallante, tell us a little bit more about your story and why you're doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Great to see you guys. Not quite as prolific as the gentleman that's going to follow me here, but I was on a trajectory as a young hockey player growing up in the Toronto area, where the sport came very natural to me. Played at the highest levels all the way through midget hockey. I was a high OHL draft pick, turned it down to go the scholarship route. And that's where I started to run into some adversity. I was a young guy, just turned 17, so a true freshman. And, a little bit different than the junior route, the college route. You know, we've got a bigger roster. Guys are a little bit older. Physically, when I look back now, physically, I probably needed another year or two of maturity. Mentally, I probably could have used another 10 years of maturity. My career stumbled around a little bit through college. I fought confidence, and I used alcohol as a crutch through that time period. I was able and fortunate enough to get invited to a few NHL camps. Attended the North Stars camp in '92. Had a good camp, but I completely missed my draft year. So I went from a high OHL draft. Potential or a high OHL draft pick, didn't even get drafted into the NHL. However, I was able to squeak a few years out in the minor leagues before I just lost passion for the game at that point. Stepped out of hockey and away from the game, and spent about 22 years in the corporate world. Had a major setback in my life in 2015. I was going through a divorce. I had two young kids, and I was hit head on my motorcycle, and spent the next 40 days in the hospital. I had 8 surgeries. I was given my last rites the first day I was in there. And, I look back on that now, and it was a blessing in my life, because it opened up my eyes to the life that I was leading, the person who I thought I was supposed to be versus the person that I am. And I always say this in my story. There was a nurse that came and approached me after I got it out of ICU after a week and a half, after being given my last rites, but still being here. And she said, we've had people with less injuries not survive. You've been given a second chance at life. Don't waste it. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. Because I was, pretty mangled up. I crushed the left side of my body, and all I was worried about was, how am I going to get out of here? How am I going to provide for my kids? How am I going to even honor the commitment that I had to my ex-wife, who hadn't worked up until that time? I was the sole provider. And so coming out of that was sort of my aha moment as I went through a 2-year recovery period, where I felt a calling to give back to the community, to be of service, and to look back over my life on the adversities and the ways that I handled situations, and realized that there is so much more that could be given to these young athletes to show them, A, not just how to be a better athlete, but primarily how to be a better person. And in doing so, I created this platform, Mindset Body Bank, which is a holistic approach to being a person as well as an athlete, and developing a foundation for themselves, not only for the game that they're playing, but for life when sports ends, because we know at some point it's going to come to an end and you've got a lot more of life to live than you do as a, if you're fortunate enough to even play and get paid as a professional. So that's the 35,000 foot view of what I'm doing.
Hey, Jason, what about your story?
Great story, Rob. That's pretty powerful stuff. Our paths are different, it sounds like, but we end up in the same spot to accomplish the same goals. And I think that's to help young athletes, male, female, to reach their goals and dreams. And I think that's what really inspires me on a day-to-day basis. And that's where my own history comes from and my own experience with the game, as you guys mentioned, I was kind of always on the radar of being that can't miss prospect, right from a young age, probably around 10, 11 years old. And that continued on, through junior and through my draft year and, with the World Junior Team selection and 31st overall, which was supposed to be a first round pick. And that was like my first real, being faced with adversity and how to handle a draft season when a coach doesn't want to put you on the ice and there's stuff being said about you in the crowd and managing the dynamics of a father that's, battling with the general manager and the coach. In the meantime, you're just trying to play the game, and do the best that you can. And then obviously that turns into an NHL contract, that turns into NHL opportunity, big trades and, big cities, big markets, bright lights. I was always operating under the pretense that if you had enough talent and if you worked hard enough, you were going to get there. And I think that old maxim is broken. I believe that many have proven it to be broken. And the big missing piece is what Rob's talking about and what I love to talk about, and that is building the person behind the player. It's easy to get focused on the physical aspects of the game. And I think that's where all the time, energy, and your resources go, because it's tangible. You can touch it, you can see it, you can feel it. But when you really want to have these big dreams come into play and you really want to accomplish these audacious goals, which I am such a big supporter of, you need fundamental skills and you need fundamental perspective and approach techniques that are going to enable you to be able to manage those obstacles. And I heard a really cool quote yesterday that an obstacle is just evidence of a goal. And, if you don't have a goal, there's not going to be an obstacle. And if you want to get anywhere, there's going to be obstacles. And you got to know how to manage them, because they derail people and they derail careers. So I definitely like building the person behind the player. I usually don't tell the players that I work with that, because that's not quite as interesting as becoming a better hockey player. But it massively affects performance, and it massively handles your ability to practice with intention, handle situations and relationships within the game, keep your development on a trajectory that's going to eclipse the competition, and so on and so on and so on. So it's a really sweet spot for me. I was fortunate to play in the NHL. Of course, I'm very proud of that. But an interesting way why I'm doing what I'm doing is because there was so much more for me. And I know that there were scenarios where I could have handled things differently, surrounded myself with people differently, thought about things differently. And I was a pretty reflective, pensive young man. I mean, I have to say that. But I mean, when you're trying to do these things on your own, it's a bit of a recipe for disaster. So I'm just trying to give back, mentor these young athletes, some not so young, just be the best they can be. And that if you're not thinking about the mind and the mental aspect of the game, you're really missing a huge part of the picture.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with both of you. And your stories are similar in some fronts, but both, the trajectory you got to and then having all the hurdles kind of deal with along it. Just want to ask it while we're not necessarily on the topic, but before we get into other subjects on the mindset side, both of you played to a really high level of hockey. I'm curious, because of the challenges that we face in today's world, the last 10 years in particular, hockey, like many other sports, they've been asking players to start focusing and specializing in the sport much earlier than they should be. So I've talked to parents with 6, 7, 8-year-old kids that the kids, that's all they're doing is hockey, hockey, hockey. What's your take on that spin? And should kids like, did both of you play other sports going up along the path as you were heading up there? Curious.
Later on.
I think it's too much right now. And, you know, when I reflect back on it, I played other sports, and I felt that it made me hungrier to want to come back to play hockey. I see a lot of kids getting burnt out right now at a younger age, just because it's not even, I think there's a big influence from the coaches, the associations, and from the parents. And it's this comparison, well, little Johnny is doing it, so my kid's got to do it. If he's going to keep up and play at this level, he's got to continue to work on these things. And I think you lose a little bit of rounding yourself out as an individual by practicing other sports. And there's a whole bunch of studies around motor skills and how they can benefit you in your primary sport. And I think it becomes an issue with more with the parents and this pressure to continually work on, on the skill part of the game. And this is where, you know, I'm hoping to try to change that a little bit. And it sounds like Jason's program is very similar. If you're not working on the mental side to complement the physical side and rounding yourself out as an individual, I think you're leaving a lot on the table and you're setting yourself up for risk and burnout. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I echo that for the most part. I mean, my personal philosophy, and that's one thing I try to be objective about, is that there isn't, I don't think, one right path for everyone. My own kids, I got three kids that play. Like, I make them put the skates away. I mean, I got two that are super keen and would play all year round, but I just not letting them do that. I think they're too young at this stage to do that, and I want them to be involved in other things. However, I know there are kids that can handle it all year and they love it and they want to go. I mean, I think it's the intention and it's the passion and it's the joy, I think. I mean, when it is coming from the parents and, we need to do this to keep up so we don't get left behind type mentality, that's when it's broken and that's when it's toxic. But if it's for the love of the game and these kids love to do it and that's what they want to do, and they're looking forward to getting on the ice every time, you know, I think you can see it in those kids' eyes. And if that's what they want, then that's what they want. And I'm not going to judge that. One thing I would, if you have those kids though, and I think that we're getting way too far away, the pendulum has swung too far that every time they're on the ice, there's somebody there with a whistle in their mouth, telling them what to do and telling them how to do it and which pylon to skate around. And I think that's where it starts to get automatic and robotic, and you got to let them have some fun, especially at a young age, and just throw some pucks on the ice and let them enjoy it. And, and even to go back in the day where Wayne Gretzky said he put his skates away, I mean, he was on the ice 8 hours a day, every day for like 7 months, you know what I mean? But there just wasn't someone telling him what to do all the time. He was in the backyard rink having a blast playing shinny, right? And I think that's where it becomes passionate. The joy is still there and all that stuff still remains. So yes, for me, I think play sports, become an athlete, become well-rounded. I'm a pretty hard line with that in my family, but I do understand that there's other ways to do it and just make sure they keep having a good time with it.
Yeah, that kind of.
I'm going to comment just on something Jason said, because it reminded me, you know, if you look at a silver lining through all of this with the pandemic, one of the things that I noticed was with the rinks shut down, there was this resurgence in ODRs and kids playing outside. And it reminded me of my youth, because like Jason said, you know, Gretzky spent 8 hours a day on the rink, and growing up, they were everywhere where I was. You know, I lived just outside of Toronto, and Mississauga at that time was not fully developed, and there were outdoor rinks and ponds available, and that's what we did. And we loved it because, you know, there was this passion to play. There wasn't somebody on the ice blowing a whistle, and I really enjoyed seeing that during the pandemic and seeing kids just jump on the ice and bringing their skates and their sticks down the street and just having fun. So
yeah, you aren't getting benched. You aren't getting yelled at. You aren't getting told how you're not doing something right. Yeah, you know what I mean, absolutely. You're just out there playing. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of environments right now.
Yeah. I think you nailed it on the head with the word playing. Kids don't play. There's so much structure, the robotic and the coaching can be overkill. I grew up too back east, outdoor rinks, and there was nothing better than just going out and playing shinny for 6-7 hours at a time. And what stopped you from playing? You either were too hungry to stop, or your parents said it's dinner time. That was it. You went back and kept playing again. But kids don't do that anymore for the sake of playing. They're doing it for that path to the high level. So, Rob, you touched on it earlier about the burnout concept, and I'm sure it's probably something that both of you are dealing with kids as they're kind of going up this pipeline. What are you doing to help them avoid that and, you know, reinforce the importance of loving the game more at the end of the season than they did at the beginning?
Go ahead, Jason. I'll let you take this one.
Yeah, I don't actually, the kids I deal with, I don't see it. I think maybe that's just the brand of what I'm building, maybe to my audience, because that's definitely, I'm pretty firm with that, you know, that I think that we make this professional well before and well beyond as professional. I'm all about giving kids an advantage, you know, and giving them an opportunity and opening doors for them that maybe they weren't able to see otherwise. But if we're doing it strictly because we want to get an NHL contract or whatever that thing may be, like that's when it's backwards. So, you know, I don't see many kids with burnout. I see kids that aren't having fun, potentially, but I don't see kids that are burnt out, that they're doing too much. I think these kids are capable of a lot, and maybe it's how they're positioning, you know, the story they're telling themselves of what they're doing, and maybe they're getting tired and these things are happening to them. But it's just the joy. Like I had a massive breakthrough with one of my clients just on something as simple as finding and reconnecting with what the heck they like about the game and having that be the intention, you know, instead of being so critical and so trying to be perfect and got to get better. It's just like, what the hell do you like to do? And go do that. And do it well, you know, and then the rest is going to take care of itself. So I do see some of that. I think that comes from, that's a high achiever mentality, I think, trying to do things really well, trying to be perfect at it. It's also a part of the environment, though. I think everyone's trying to be so great, so young, so early. Comes from home, too, that we kind of lose that passion and that perspective. So that's more what I deal with, is just reconnecting to what the hell they put skates on for in the first place. But I don't really tell kids to, you know, you have to stop doing things or you have to stop working out. I don't see the burnout aspect as much.
Yeah. And I'll echo that, Jason. I think, you know, I haven't seen a lot of it. I do see kids that just feel a little bit tired right now. You know, my program, I just launched it about 18, 19 months ago. So, you know, with the pandemic, the kids are just chomping to get back on the ice. Now I do deal with some other sports, lacrosse and football and basketball. And, you know, it's kind of similar depending on the age group and the pressure to compete. I think one of the biggest things that I hear from that younger age group is this fear of failure and wanting to please their parents. And, you know, we've had a recent situation, I wouldn't even call it a major situation, but just through one of my group sessions, asked the kids, you know, well, what's one of the biggest things that you fear? You know, what keeps you up at night? And I was working with a young team, and half of them said it was the ride home with their parents, you know. And, you know, Glenn, I know you deal with the parent side, and this was something that, you know, it didn't really shock me, but it did, especially at this age. And I know that, you know, parents can sometimes become a little bit fanatical and try to live vicariously through the kids. And what I try and do is just anchor them back to, you know, what Jason talked about is why are you here? What are you doing? What do you love? You know, and are you being, do you feel like you're being pushed into this? And reinforce the fact that, you know, you're going to make mistakes, and mistakes are okay. And, you know, most parents may not understand the nature of the game, and they're not waking up saying, you know, hey, I'm going to give it to you today. Their intent is really, they want to make you better. They haven't developed the skills on how to approach that. And so that's kind of what I've been dealing with more, a little bit more on the parent side than the burnout side. And it's this fear of failing and then being identified by being successful based on how you perform in a game, you know. So I try and remove those thoughts and those barriers as I'm working with some of the younger athletes.
Yeah, and you kind of touched on that whole ride home, and the NCAA did a survey, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, and they asked I don't know how many hundreds of athletes, what was their worst memory growing up? What do you think it was?
Ride home. Yeah.
Parents then, and that was like, I think, 5 years ago. But it is still one of the big deal breakers where it's pushing kids out of the game. And sadly, we lose. And I shared this statistic. I was talking to a couple of an NCAA coach and another high level junior coach in a workshop that I did recently. And when I shared the statistic, they were just kind of, whoa, 70% of kids globally, particularly in the US, are pulling out of sport by the age of 13. But Project Play last year identified that 62% of them are pulling out by the age of 11 after only playing a sport for 3 years. So it's become a problem. My hope is coming out of COVID and the work that the two of you guys are doing in terms of the mindset, hopefully we'll start seeing that shift when our kids are playing for the love of the game and you know, the fun aspect. But that pressure cooker environment in that ride can be, and it's not just the ride home, it's the ride too. I've seen a lot of kids, even in parking lots, being berated by their parents. So that's a sidebar issue in itself. So you both kind of touched on mindset. Growth mindset, is that an area that you focus on because of the importance of that growth mindset versus fixed mindset? Have you explored that with your athletes?
I think having a growth mindset is, you know, Carol Dweck really did a deep dive into that in her mindset book, talking about, you know, a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. And, you know, depending on the age of the kids that you're working with, and, you know, I'll work with kids all the way down to, I used to call it, you know, Bantam or minor Bantam. What is it now? U13 or
U12? U15.
Yeah. You know, so you don't want to overwhelm them with terms, but so what I try and do is I'll use terms like keeping an open mind. Right. And I'll try and work with them on, you know, the power of repetition and how, you know, failure isn't really failure unless you decide you're going to quit. I try to focus them on using failure as an opportunity to fail forward, learning from it, coming out of that and asking, you know, how did I do? What did I do well? And what could I improve on? And use those experiences. And those are the kind of questions that you can start to build a growth mindset on. And you know, there's this idea that if you're focused in a fixed mindset or a negative mindset, that you should immediately take it to a positive. As an athlete, I think we kind of struggle with this idea of going from being determined and resilient to being okay with something not working out. I recently read a book by Trevor Moad, and he talks about, you know, it takes what it takes and the idea of neutrality. And I like the idea of a neutral mindset for an athlete, because what you're doing really is you're coming back to what I call I reference the calm blue center. So in the idea of a storm, you've got all of the peripheral pressure on the outside, and in the middle is where the calm is. And if the athlete can find that calm between stimulus and reaction and use behavior rather than emotion for how they are going to react, then I think that what that does is it allows them to grow into a behavior pattern rather than a reactive emotional pattern.
Awesome. Yeah, good stuff. That's a book. I mean, you referenced it already there. Mindset by Carol Dweck is like, I mean, anyone listening to this right now who hasn't read it, you got to read it. It's sort of like one of the top three books I think any human should read. It's just, it's really powerful. It opens up your mind to different perspectives. And I think for a lot of us, a lot of people out there who aren't maybe as reflective and as, you know, able to internalize stuff, it's a really eye-opening kind of way to consider how we operate and go about things. And not only as a, you know, as an adult operating in this world, but then how are we influencing our children with our actions, with our thoughts, with our words? So yeah, really great book. I definitely talk about a growth mindset, Glenn, for sure. You know, for me, and just from a little personal experience, like the big eye opener for me was I had a fixed mindset when it came to talent. Like the most talented were the ones that got to the NHL. I was surrounded by people telling me how great I was. I was in an environment where that seemed to be reflective and seemed to be true, right? The best talent, the most talented players were the ones that got to move on. I was never not a hard worker. I worked my ass off, but I didn't necessarily continue to develop that talent, which for me now, like after the game is over, it's like, holy smokes, did I miss a massive opportunity there? Because I was gifted in this way that others weren't. Yet I was working on all these other things instead of increasing this and increasing the skill gap that was already there. So to think about talent as a skill, like that just whole concept is amazing, that you can get better at anything. Like that's a really belief that I try and instill in these athletes, that you can get better at anything. And I think that's a big eye opener, because I view success as getting better every day. I don't care about like whether you make the team or whether you do whatever. I mean, if you go to bed at night and you're a little better than you were in some area than you were when you woke up, you did well. And that's sort of how I look at these things. And I wish that was something that I had internalized during my hockey career. And as a pro all the way through. And I think that, again, there's lots of aspects of that growth mindset. And she gets into all the layers of the young in there. But for me, that aspect that you're never done, right? You're never done. You're only done when you want to be done. So when you wake up with that perspective in the morning, boy, the world, it takes on a whole new meaning sometimes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's similar to the coaching component, lifelong learning. And the greatest coaches of all time, the analogy I share with, you know, many coaches when I've had clinics or what have you, is John Wooden was still learning and taking notes at conferences that he was speaking at when he was like in his 70s. And people would say to him, like, what are you doing that for? Like, you've been there. You've done that. You're one of the greatest coach ever. He goes, because I may learn something. And the greatest people continue to learn. Sidney Crosby, another perfect example. Mike Johnson, when he was coaching him, shared an analogy with one of my colleagues that Sidney does not practice at less than 100%. He just goes harder. But the Penguins were so committed to helping the players of the Penguins develop their skills at the level that they're at, they built another practice rink right beside their practice rink so they didn't have to wait 15 minutes for the Zamboni. Like, it just shows how invested they are, and statistically, and unfortunately, got knocked out of the cup 15 consecutive years playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I'm going to shift it to the big focus of where we're at, where we're going to be on July 17th. Mental health is probably one of the biggest hot topics going around right now. What's your take on Naomi Osaka's commitment to pulling out of the French Open and possibly Wimbledon because of interviews impacting mental health? And then second, what is your definition of mental health in general? Rob?
Well, first of all, with Osaka, I give her a ton of credit for being able to leverage her status and not be forced into something that she wasn't comfortable doing. And I think a lot of times, and you know, Jason could probably address it more than I did because I was just in the minor leagues. But at that premier level, a lot of times you're asked to do things as part of a responsibility to either A, the team, and or the organization or the association. And you know, if she's using, you know, her mental health as a reason why she doesn't want to do it, it might affect her performance. There's probably triggers that are involved in there that she has now become aware of. Then I think, you know, I respect her decision, and anybody that would use that as a reason for not having to give the interviews. I understand why they want you to do it, because, you know, they're trying to promote the game and it's more of an appeal to the audience. You know, but as a player, you find yourself, you want to play. And you want to be able to perform, and you want to be able to give your best. And I think sometimes some of the questions that come from the reporters are a little bit intrusive and out of line as it relates to that particular performance, and starts to cross the line into a personal and social lives. And so to that effect, they shouldn't have to be subject to, you know, to those kind of interviews. So I applaud her for taking a stand there. And I support it. As far as mental health, I think it's a very, very broad topic. And it covers so many different aspects of things that, you know, the time we have on here, we're probably not going to be able to touch on them all. But I would say in my opinion, there's a difference between what I would call mental health and mental fitness. And I think, you know, mental health and there's definitely crossover between the two. And if you are not aware of the signs, you can go from being in a negative mental fitness position, and that could escalate or you know, de-escalate into a mental health position. You know, I know part of what I try and promote is, you know, a healthy way to think, react, and question. And you know, if your performance is being affected by things that kind of lie outside of what I would say Jason or I do, you know, I tell all my clients, I'm not a therapist. I'm not going to recommend, you know, I can't recommend medication, nor will I. And if I feel like the conversations are going to a level below where I'm able to offer, you know, some sort of progressive application for them, then I would refer them to a family doctor and seek help. You know, I'm strictly, you know, working on helping them become hopefully a better athlete, and a better person, and building a foundation around, you know, what mental fitness is versus mental health.
Awesome. What about you, Jason?
Yeah, great points, Rob. You know, I think we're in a space, I say that laughing, but it's nothing to laugh about, with mental health versus, as Rob's calling it, mental fitness. And the line's blurry. And I think that, as Rob said, like, we need to be really careful about, you know, treading on the clinical aspect of mental health. And when it becomes clinical, what that means, you know, I mean, I definitely feel that I can help kids with anxiety. I can help them with fear-based behavior. I can help them with a lot of things. But there is that line. And when that line crosses, I'm not sure exactly where that is. It's a feel thing, but then, you know, that's where you need to get professional help in that field. I believe that a lot of it stems from lack of skills, like lack of being able to skillfully engage in your environment and what gets thrown at you. And I think that there's also a definite lack of communication. So when it comes to those things. So I think all the talk that is happening about mental health, and that we want people to be able to talk about it, that the stigma is starting to be lifted, I think that's massively helpful. Because when you do see these stars like Osaka saying, this bothers me so much that I'm willing not to play in this major event, that rings true to that 13-year-old sitting on the couch. That rings true to the 25-year-old athlete that's, you know, trying to go for a new job interview after they just left the game. Like, there's aspects of that I think allows people to feel more human inside their own body, that other people are doing this, and allows them to maybe come out and be able to speak about it. And I do think that that's like the first step for sure, is being able to talk before it becomes something that doesn't maybe necessarily have to go on that route. So that's where I mean, I love that in my mentorship capacity. I love being in a situation as a third party that all I'm doing is trying to lift these athletes up and make them be their best, that there becomes this safety and this sanctuary where they can talk about stuff. And of course, there's no report that I can put out about how many kids you've saved from whatever, but I just know, like, the ability to speak, the ability to confide, the ability to use tools in a new way and apply a new perspective to things, it can change your mental well-being. And as Rob put it, your mental fitness. So, I mean, I think we're all trying to do our part. We all recognize that this is a big thing. It has been a big thing for a long time. It's just now something that's being talked about more. And I think that the world is changing and evolving because of it. And in tournaments like the French Open and the US Open and these big stages are going to have to make some hard decisions about what is most important. Yeah, how are we going to handle this? And I don't pretend to have the answers to them, but the fact that we're even talking about it right now means that we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, it's the awareness factor, and it's become, you know, it's a global thing. So I'm just going to tag on so that each of you can share your actual platform. So Jason, maybe you can finish, because you're touching on it. Well, what specifically are you doing with your athletes and how, you know, how does your product and your platform work? And when we originally connected for this, you said you may have something in the works that's coming. You can maybe expand on that if you're ready to expand on it or whatever the case.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, I mean, traditionally, I've been working with athletes privately and sometimes with teams here and there is what I've been doing. And like this whole year and a half, let's call it 2 years of COVID, has really done a number on a lot of athletes. And in recognizing that, I put together a free course called Guide to Thrive During COVID, because there's so many athletes who are either, you know, feeling they were missing out, don't have opportunities that they thought they might have, you know, weren't being able to be scouted, weren't being able to play, lost developmental opportunities. Now they don't know what the heck's going on. And maybe some of them even have lost a little bit of their edge and a little bit of their motivation. So I put together a mini course on that, which is free. You can email me at jason@myhockey.com if you want to get access to that course. And then I put together a course, which I've never done before, with a group of athletes. It's only 20 athletes, and I'm calling it the Peak Potential Hockey Project. And what it is, it's 4 weeks long. You get direct access to me in four group calls. You have access to me outside of those calls. And we go through four different modules, things that I think are very important to people. One, 10X development. I think you can collapse time frames when you think about them properly. When you approach your work properly, you don't have to be on the ice more. You don't have to be in the gym more. You have to be more intentional about what you're doing. I talk about becoming bulletproof. That's where I get into the growth mindset for hockey players. I talk about extreme accountability in week four, which is aligning your thoughts, dreams, and your actions with your goals and dreams, and how to be accountable to those things. And then we also talk about mental agility, and that's in week one, where I dive into the ability to be able to provide meaning again to these obstacles we were talking about. Like, what does an obstacle mean to you? And when you get really good at identifying the opportunities and the solutions and the benefits of them when they're in front of you, you're taking positive action towards your goal. You're not getting in the slumps. You're not derailing yourself. So I cover four things that I think are really important, that I think aren't talked about enough, that aren't talked about in a way that are applicable to athletes, and I'm walking them through, and I'm helping, I'm supporting them along the way. So I'm really excited about that, and that's on my website, upmyhockey.com, the Peak Potential Hockey Project.
Awesome. Just a clarification, because when we originally were listening, you changed your logo recently. Up My Life, was that the precursor to Up My Hockey, and you're focusing more on the hockey?
Yeah, exactly. That was my own personal journey into the coaching space. So I started out working one-on-one with entrepreneurs, male entrepreneurs, and it was the brand was Up My Life, and did that for 18, 24 months, and then kind of just realized, you know, everyone has their way of getting to where they are, right? And it was just like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I needed as an athlete. I have so much to offer these athletes. You know, essentially 40 years of experience into what I'm doing now. And yeah, so that morphed or evolved into Up My Hockey.
Awesome. Okay, well, how about you, Rob? Product services, and how do people track you down?
Yeah, so, you know, you can look me up anywhere on any social media at Mindset Body Bank. You know, I've got one-on-one clients. I work in team clients. I've got group programs. You know, essentially, you know, my programs cover six different areas. And it's, you know, creating a heightened self-awareness. It's, you know, increased control over your physical and mental states. We'll talk about the ability to manage internal and external distractions. We'll focus on tools to strengthen visualization and imagery. And then following that, we'll get into ways to reduce critical errors and the mental side of the game. And then knowledge behind how you can improve team cohesion. So, you know, I try and include in the group programs, if I'm working with a team, I'd like the coaches to also be involved, because I think it's critical that, you know, they understand the nature of the program so that they can continue to facilitate it once I'm not there. Very much like Jason, I make myself available to my athletes whenever, wherever they need me. I think it's important as they go through the journey that they know that there's that support mechanism there, that accountability person. And I try to be that for the young guys and for some of the pros that I work with. And ultimately, you know, get them thinking about not only how they can be great athletes, but get them thinking for what the next part of their life is going to be. And I'm sure Jason could could share many stories about guys that they wake up the next morning and they just don't know who they are, or why, you know, what to do, or where to go, because they've spent so much time identifying with the jersey and the logo and you know, the identity of being a hockey player, and we're so much more than that.
Yeah, and it's all about the transition. Once you hang up your skates, what do you do? And if it all gets tied to that jersey, then you're in real trouble, right? So last question before we wrap up. What advice would you have for parents to help their kids that are aspiring to play at a, you know, at a higher level and keep moving up the ranks to stay on track to do so?
I'd say I'll take that, Rob, if you want me to. When I'm working with an athlete, the parent, their inner circle, let's say, needs to understand the program too, or understand the terminology and the verbiage, because it's hard to get these things in action, right? Ingrained and become repetitive and be something that you can use, which is why, and I'm sure it's why Rob does it too, is that you need access to people, and you need to be absorbing that in your environment. So that's the first thing. Like if you are at all interested in your child's high performance or attaining whatever level, get involved in what is required for them to how it is required for them to think. You know, it's easy to go pick up the book and find the best power skater in the area and sign them up for lessons and to do that. But that's not where he's getting internal drive from, or she. That's not where she's finding resilience. That's not where she's finding ways to approach the game that are going to benefit her. So I really say invest your time in how you can make them a better person, one for sure. And stop worrying about results would be the second one. Is how hard did they work? Did they accomplish what they wanted to do? And if they didn't, why not? Give them a hug, move forward. You know, like, it, just keep it real simple. I love empowering my athletes. Like, empowering them to make their choices, to be able to, take their dreams and go and chase them. We don't want to be treating them like marionettes and like puppets. So, I mean, ask a lot of questions is the one thing. The more you're telling, the less they're listening. So just ask a lot of questions.
And just to tag on to that, probably the most important question I ask my kids was the beginning of every season: what do you want to play this year? Because I ran into a situation with my son where he stopped playing hockey, and he said to me after the tryouts, he goes, "You never asked me. You just keep putting me and signing me up." And I'm like, that's probably the biggest mistake I ever made. Fortunately, he was able to play a whole bunch of different sports. And after a year of that, he goes, "I want to play hockey again." But I just assumed as a parent that he wanted to keep playing. And that's probably my biggest tip to a lot of parents, is ask them if they want to play that sport year over year after year. And or is there anything else they want to try out? Because ultimately, as a parent, we want our kids to be well-rounded and ready for the real world, right? Because eventually that sport career is going to finish, as both of you realize. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, no, I agree with a lot of Jason's approach. You know, I think anything that we introduce at this point, first of all, what I'm finding is you know, a lot of parents are chasing the skills and the nutrition and the physical workouts. So educating them about the power of a program like ours is the first step. Then getting them to understand what the program is about, very similar to Jason's approach, so that they can continue to reinforce in a positive way what I am guiding these guys through. And I say guiding because, you know, you said it best, Glenn, too, is I just ask a lot of questions. You know, a lot of times the kids are the ones, they have the answers. They just haven't taken the time to think about them. And so I look at it, it's like peeling back an onion, right? Mm-hmm. And through just, you know, especially in the initial stages, just asking a lot of questions. And I don't sugarcoat the way I approach them. I tell them, we're not going to talk about sports out at the beginning, because I want to know who you are And I want you to know who you are before we can unlock that opportunity that sits inside you. So having the parents on board with that and helping the kids develop things like core values and what they're truly passionate about and identifying what that goal and that vision is, why they wake up in the morning, what keeps them awake at night, and having the parents play a supportive role in that. The most important thing is consistency and creating, you know, new habits and new routines. You know, as we're playing with the mind right now, you're almost unlearning them through, you know, their social things that they have been brought up or what their current belief systems are. And we know that our mind sometimes lies to us based on our experiences. So when we're creating these new neural pathways, it's repetition, 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 right? It's the same reason why, you know, as a young athlete, we used to get angry at our coaches and go, why are we doing the same drill over and over and over again? It's so boring. Well, we know that now, that the more you do it, the more it becomes part of your conscious behavior. And that's the goal, is to get to that. And if you get the parents on board and help them understand that, you know, this isn't a physical workout, although that can be part of it. This isn't a nutrition-based program, although that is a part of it. It's a mental journey that your son or your daughter is going to go on and uncover who they are and why they are playing this game.
I just wanted to ask you, because I think one thing that I would like to mention, and don't know if you experience this or not as well, but I find with the space that we're in, it's a lot of you don't know what you don't know. And I know that, I mean, you and I, we sound like we're learners, and I know that I'm learning more every day, but there's so much that is misunderstood or not really recognized as being important, like not even from the hockey player, but also from the parents who are making the decisions. And one of the big things I run up against, especially in this time of year, which is why I actually created this program, like I think it's the perfect time to start, because people want to wait until the season's on, right? Okay, we'll do it during. Well, no, because if you're trying to put out the fire in the middle of the fire, I mean, that's not going to work. So you can work on this stuff in the off season. You can use it through golf or tennis or your workouts or just going to school. Like there's so many opportunities to start using some of these techniques and these perspectives. So when you get into the moment in the heat of a season, now you've been able to practice it. You've been able to ingrain some of these new patterns, and you might actually be effective in using them. So I don't know if you hear that, Rob, but it's like, no, yeah. Like now is the right time. Now's the right time to start.
Jason, we're on the same page, and this is part of the battle in sharing and educating people. And it's not what I find too. It's not even so much the parents or the kids. It's when you're approaching an association or coaches or teams, I'm finding that the coaches are the ones that put up the block. And you know, maybe I don't have a name because I didn't play in the NHL, but they look and they'll say, well, you know what, I've got my kids and they're good and we're okay. And it's such a misnomer that they think they're okay and that they're going to fix a problem. They're trying to fix a thinking problem with a physical action. And you know, I love the idea that now is the time leading up. This is all part of preparation. You know, you're not going to go and shoot 100 pucks the night before a game and expect to go out and have your shot worked on. That's something you're going to practice all summer. If you don't start working on the mental side of your game now, at whatever stage you're being introduced it to, you're that much further ahead. It's like climbing a mountain, right? You know, at some point you're going to look back and go, okay, I've got to this point. You want to start climbing the mountain now, not in September, right before training camp or when you know, there's so many opportunities in life and in sports and outside of this to use the things that we're teaching them and guiding them through. So 100% agree with you. And I see the biggest block from the coaches and the associations, not even the parents.
Right. Yeah. And I've been in the same space where I've been running around the country to mentor coaches and work with parents. They're becoming more receptive. There's the early adopters. Canada has been a little bit more of a challenge in some other markets because the U.S., as I shared with you earlier, the attrition rates have been horrific. So a lot more associations are seeking for this kind of money. And that kind of sets up our last kind of takeaway from this chat. On July 17th, both Rob and Jason will be participating in our second Mental Fitness Summit and have an opportunity to basically do more of a deep dive of the work and share that of many others that are participating in that event. I'm really looking forward to hearing a little bit more about the stuff that you're doing, Jason. I know you and Rob and I will be kind of co-hosting the event. I highly encourage you to consider signing up for it. We're about to launch our event page. Really looking forward to seeing you there, Jason. And I can't thank you enough for making time for this. And it's kind of interesting how small the world is. You know, you're also in the youth hockey coaching space now, and looking forward to seeing that path evolve as you continue to grow in that space. Thanks, Rob, for joining me once again. This has been a blast. We could have probably done this for hours, and maybe we'll loop back in another conversation, because there's so much good that I think can happen when parents and coaches and organizations recognize we can't just focus on the skills, drills, tactics, and systems. We need to start focusing on the people, because the people are the ones that are losing out with all the attrition and all the stuff that's going around now. So, and kudos to the likes of, you know, Osaka for coming forward and say, hey, enough is enough. We need to figure out a better way to do this. So thanks to both of you for being here. And remember, we got a little bit of a lull before we shut her down. So thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, Rob. Great to meet you.
Great to meet you as well, Jason.